Frain Olson. I'm the crop economist and marketing specialist with NDSU Extension.
We've gotten a lot of news in the last 24 hours. Russia officially invaded the Ukraine, and we've seen a lot of things happen since. A little bit of a domino effect, if you will. We saw the Ukraine shut down some of their shipping. We saw Russia do the same. And it all sounds a little bit deja vu-y to me, because we visited about what could happen if Russia invades the Ukraine. We talked about that at the best of the best earlier this month. And based off of the conversation that we've had, would you say we've ticked all the boxes of things that we thought would happen?
From a grain marketing standpoint and logistics, yeah, most of them have happened. I guess the thing that surprised me was how quickly it happened. This, in one sense, some of this has been rolling out a little slower than I expected, because there's been a lot of lead time. People have kind of anticipated, okay, it looks like this pressure is building. We might be able to negotiate away, but just kept building and building. And then all of a sudden, again, the floodgates opened and suddenly there was an invasion. And since then, as you said, it's been a real domino effect. I do think the markets are, both the grain markets as well as the energy markets, are obviously kind of right now in panic mode, trying to figure out exactly what is happening and what does this mean, both short term and long term. Some of it we could anticipate, right? Some of it we could see coming. And I think there are some traders, as well as commercial buyers and sellers, that are, whether it be a processor, international buyer, or even farmers, said, okay, well, I guess things are falling into place here. Maybe not exactly like we expected, but some of this stuff is coming true. So part of it was the shock value that A, it actually did happen, and then B, what does this all mean as we move forward? And I know I've said more recently in some of my presentations, now that it's happened, the next big piece of the puzzle is, okay, how long will this last? Will this be just a few weeks, several months? Is this going to take years? And at this stage, then obviously we don't know what that is or what that will look like. We're kind of taking things day to day right now.
We think of that Black Sea region as being a really important region for export. Have you taken a chance to look and see how much of that is blocked?
There's been some, Reuters has put out some reports, because they have some, the ability to follow some of the different shipping transactions, or kind of where are the vessels at different locations. And based on at least some of the maps that I saw this morning, there's obviously a cluster of ships hanging out right around Istanbul. Because in Istanbul, Turkey, there's a canal. That's about the only way that you can get from the Black Sea into the Mediterranean Sea and then connect up to a lot of other ports. So there's a cluster of ships trying to get in and out of Istanbul. There are some clusters of vessels. Again, I don't know if they're grain vessels or energy-based vessels like crude oil or liquefied natural gas. At the other major ports, the ones that are major export terminals for both Russia as well as Ukraine. Now, as you noted, based on the information that showed up now in the press, Ukraine has halted all exports. And again, because their ports are the most vulnerable, it sounds as though Russia is doing something very similar to allow the naval vessels to be able to move around and do their thing. So it looks at least temporarily like all of the major inbound and outbound vessels are either going to be making it out just in time, just before the gates close, or they're going to be stuck. The other major issue that is now appearing would be future deliveries, because most of the international marketers have a clause in the contract called force majeure, which is basically a fancy word for act of God. So farmers are very familiar with act of God clauses in some of their production contracts. Those acts of God usually relate to some kind of weather event. But if you read the fine print, they also typically include, let's say, a fire in the processing plant, where the processing plant has to shut down. Or in this case, some kind of major disruption like a trade war that we had with the U.S. and China. Or in this case, a physical war. So we're now waiting to see, will some of the Russian companies as well as the Ukrainian companies use the force majeure clause, this act of God clause, to get out of some of their delivery requirements? Or will they continue to say, yeah, we're going to do our best to deliver, but it may be delayed because of the military action? So we, at this point, I think there's a lot of international traders and buyers waiting to find out about these force majeure clauses, whether they're going to be enforced or not. And if there is a force majeure, what happens is the buyer, the country that would, or the company that would have purchased and received the grain, has also then the ability and flexibility to go and purchase from some other country. Those clauses will obviously make a big difference on the volumes and the timing of deliveries for any additional export volume coming out of the U.S.
Well, and we visited earlier this month at Best of the Best in wheat and soy, and we talked about U.S. wheat. You know, could something like this, you know, if there's a holdup in moving product out of some of the top wheat producing areas of the world, you know, does that mean that additional business is going to come to the United States? At that time, it did not sound like that was the case. Do you still feel like that's the same today? We're too high priced that likely it's not necessarily going to be wheat. I mean, just depending on how long this lasts.
Yeah, and I guess I've kind of started to rethink some of that. So the reason I originally said that was that if you look at the countries that Ukraine and Russia typically sell to, you know, who buys the Russian wheat? It's often countries in North Africa, Egypt, the Middle East. And in today's world, the U.S., we don't export much wheat into those regions anyway. But what's going to happen now is, as we kind of look at these shifting logistics, corn and wheat, the round robin of who buys from who is a lot easier to adjust than it is in the soybean market. If you're selling whole soybeans in the global market, you have to sell to a country that has crushing capacity. And that was one of the differences when we have the U.S.-China trade wars, that there really aren't a lot of other big buyers of whole soybeans that have the capacity to crush. Now, for wheat, that's a little bit different because wheat milling is very, very common. You can have some smaller scale wheat mills that are still very viable economically. So it's much easier to play this round robin of who buys wheat from whom. So some of those countries, like let's say in Egypt, when they look around, will they come to the U.S. and buy some U.S. wheat? Probably not, because we are relatively highly priced in the world market. But it is likely that they can buy wheat from, let's say, France. Or maybe they can buy some wheat from Argentina. Or depending upon logistics, they might be able to buy some wheat from Australia. But if we start shifting, let's say, more French wheat from their traditional customers to Egypt, well, that does open up the door then for some additional customers that normally would have bought out of, let's say, a France or a Germany to come to the U.S. and backfill some of their needs. So I do think we will start to see some increased interest in U.S. wheat, in particular hard red winter wheat, just because that's the kind of wheat that Russia and Ukraine sell. But it will likely not be those countries that Russia or Ukraine typically supply.
What other products do we need to be watching, big production-wise? I know corn is Ukraine, they're a big producer of corn, right? So that's something else. Do we need to be watching that as close as wheat? Are there other things that you've got your eye on product-wise?
Yeah, there are a couple. So let's talk about corn first. So the U.S. is the largest corn exporter. Right? Mm-hmm. When you look at the volumes exported, we're by far number one. Now, number two, three, and four kind of flip-flop back and forth in the order depending upon the year and, you know, what kind of a crop they have. But the two, three, and four are usually Argentina, Brazil, and Ukraine. Well, we've had a lot of information now coming out of South America for both Brazil and Argentina because of their very, very dry conditions. Their corn crop is going to be smaller than normal, as well as their soybean crop. I know Brazil, some of their corn is being harvested now. Some of it will be planted very soon, so they kind of have two crops of corn, which make it a little more complicated. But the moral is the volumes coming out of South America in the market today are going to be smaller than we typically see. And then you add on to the fact, now short term at least, Ukraine cannot export because their ports are shut down. You know, that only leaves the United States and a few other smaller exporters that have larger volumes of corn to be able to export or to ship globally. So I do think corn will have a little bit more responsiveness, at least for direct U.S. export volume, that some of the countries that would have been buying from Ukraine are now going to shift and buy from the U.S. The other crops, from an agricultural standpoint I'm watching, is also sunflower. Now, in the United States, you know, we grow quite a bit of sunflowers, but we use almost all of it domestically. However, when we get to Russia and Ukraine, they produce a lot of sunflowers, but they're also major exporters. And the reason that becomes important is in the vegetable oil market. So sunflowers, soybean, palm oil, canola oil, cottonseed oil, peanut oil, they're all part of that vegetable oil complex. And as I think most people recognize, both in the U.S. as well as globally, vegetable oil right now is exceptionally high priced. Okay, because and a lot of it is because we don't have the supplies of palm oil globally that we normally do. They kind of had some production problems. But the moral is, now with Russia and Ukraine cutting off sunflower exports, that makes that oil supply, the supply chain for vegetable oils, even tighter. Okay, and so that there is some spillover, some kind of secondary effects, if you will, where they're not direct, but they're secondary, kind of an echo of some of the problems. So I do think we'll start to see some of the soybean oil futures also respond to some of these problems.
Is there anything else that growers up here in the north need to be watching or thinking about as we watch all of this unfold and what it could mean for them?
Yeah, so the other part, of course, the downside to this is going to be the energy prices, because Russia is usually listed as number two crude oil exporter, right behind Saudi Arabia, and then they're typically the number one natural gas exporter. Okay, so now obviously natural gas is used for both fertilizer manufacturing, production of fertilizer globally, as well as for heating. So think about drying your corn in harvest if we have a late fall. So propane prices, natural gas prices for drying your crop, as well as the feedstock going into the fertilizer industry, are also going to be impacted. Now, again, this is why I'm saying the length of the problem, how long this lasts, how long the disruptions take place, will have a major impact on, in particular, on some of the input costs, like fertilizer. So the natural gas today won't become fertilizer until for use until like fall or next spring. So there's going to be a delay here. But if there's tighter supplies for fertilizer, let's say next spring, what does that do to the value of the fertilizer we have today? It also increases. So there might be some spillover effect in the fertilizer market. The other part, as an economist, I look at it, some of the bigger picture issues. Obviously, with the energy and crude oil going up, that only has impacts on diesel fuel prices, but also influences general inflation. And I know there's on the national stage a lot of people talking about, you know, that this is actually going to influence or increase inflation rates again, because we use so much gasoline and diesel fuel and energy to be able to transport our products throughout our country, that this will also add to some of that inflation concerns. And so there are some things on the input cost side that I think farmers should be thinking about, paying attention to. Obviously, higher grain prices are helping on the revenue side, but there's going to be some negatives on the cost side as well. One of the other things in the back of my mind that's floating around, and I think it will, in my opinion, be kind of an important piece: what is the response from China going to be? And the reason I'm saying that is Russia has a lot of natural resources. How do they generate, what's their core base of wealth that they generate within their country? And a lot of it is the production or sale of natural resources like lumber, as I mentioned, natural gas, crude oil. Well, if they have been trying to move into the European market for a lot of that, but if the European market is cut off, will they start shipping to China? Will that be the economic relief valve that Russia uses to try and maintain their economy? And so I think some of the effectiveness of these economic sanctions from the U.S. and Western Europe will depend pretty heavily on how China responds to this invasion. What do they do? Do they come in and provide a safety net, or do they add into the economic sanctions and say, yeah, we're upset about this also?